Welcome to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, a student of nature-led gardening and a person who celebrates love, nature, and magic. And very pleased to have joining us right now Maria Rodel, author of Love, Nature, and Magic, Shamanic Journeys into the Heart of My Garden. Welcome to Food Freedom Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You have a great window on the world in the last couple of decades, but give us an overview of just tell us whatever you like to share about yourself.
Well, I grew up in a family business that was a publisher of health and gardening information. We published Organic Gardening Magazine since 1942, and I grew up on the original organic farm. So I have a really solid grounding in nature and gardening, but I also became CEO of the company and until we sold it about 8 years ago. So I have a very interesting perspective of the whole industry of health and wellness and nature and gardening. And I'm very happy to be free of it. And able to focus on the things I love most, which is nature and
nature.
Food.
So 1942, publishing an organic magazine. What was that like back then?
Well, I wasn't born yet. I was born in 1962.
Born in 1962, too, by the way, so we share that.
But we grew up in an environment where most people made fun of us and called my grandfather and my father, quacks and crazy people. But living on that farm, I could see, this is amazing. This is beautiful. This is delicious. Like, you guys don't know what you're missing. So it gave me it's both an outsider, but also, confident in my own perception of how things were.
I love that phrase you just said, confidence in my own perception. And, you have such an interesting window on the history of the organic movement. And we're going to be digging more into the growing up in the Rodel family later in the show. But I want to start by reading some of the reviews of your most recent book. This is from Betty Midler. The book we didn't know we needed at the time we needed it most. Love, Nature, and Magic will blow your mind and open your heart. And that's from the author of Marley and Me. I love that book. Love, Nature, and Magic is about sentience, a living world more spectacular and alive than one can imagine. A shared consciousness known to indigenous people for over 10,000 years. Once this is understood, what else can you do but honor and love all of life? And that's from Paul Hawken, founder of Project Drowned Drawdown. So Maria, what has been some of the reaction to the book?
Well, so first of all, as illustrated by the quotes you read, I mean, I have a lot of interesting relationships with people. John Grogan used to work for Organic Gardening for me. I served on Bette Midler's New York Restoration Project nonprofit for many years. And, Paul Hawken was, his first book was about Findhorn, which is the magical, spiritual place in Scotland. So
where they demonstrated they could grow bigger tomatoes by praying.
Yes. So, but the day that the book was scheduled to come out on the pub date, I had a stroke, which I'm now thankfully fully recovered from. But so put all the promotion on hold for a while. So it's been a slow build, but everybody who finds it and reads it seems to love it, which is the most important thing to me.
Tell us a little bit about your stroke journey and what you've learned in that and how that's coming for you.
Well, I write about it in my Substack, which is Maria Rodel's newsletter, Life Unfiltered. But it was a kick in the pants. And what was interesting is it really just reiterated the message that I got from a lot of the nature beings from Love, Nature, Magic, which is like, slow down, relax, have fun, enjoy nature, don't keep pushing and stressing. Mugwort continued to be, as you and I have spoken about, mugwort was even more correct about me than I wrote about in the book, because I, through the process of testing afterwards, I found out I actually have sleep apnea, which, you know, mugwort was trying to tell me I have a sleep issue. And I was like, I don't have a sleep issue. You know, so it's been an ongoing relationship with nature, and especially with mugwort.
That's fascinating. And I'm in full disclosure. So I was drinking some mugwort tea from my garden. And as I often do, I go to sleep listening to podcasts. So I just put mugwort in my podcast. And that's how I listen to a podcast for you. But for someone who may not be familiar with mugwort, share your mugwort story.
So as you might know, I'm an avid gardener. And not just like, I'm not a farmer. And I'm not a, I grow vegetables, but my real pleasure is landscaping and, you know, beautiful flower beds and trees and just creating an atmosphere. And I had been struggling with mugwort. And I had a friend, a landscaper who works for like fancy people. And I'd asked him, how do I get rid of this? What is this? And why is it here? How do I get rid of it? And he's like, oh, the only way to get rid of it is through using Roundup. And I was like, geez, you know, that's never used Roundup. I'm not about to start, but I'm tempted, honestly. And, you know, if you Google mugwort, like the top two pages is like how to kill it using Roundup. So it was during the pandemic, you know, the lockdown. And I was like, I am going to kill this plant. I'm going to get them all. I'm going to weed it. I'm going to have the perfect garden. And so it was while I was attacking it that I felt it trying to get my attention. You know, I just felt it kind of saying, hold on here. Can we talk about this? And I had been doing shamanic journeying for a long time, but I'd never tried talking to a plant or talking to an animal. I would just like start the drum app and see where, you know, things took me. So that night I decided to try doing a journey to mugwort, and it changed everything. And it really shifted my perspective. And, you know, what mugwort said to me was, you know, first of all, why are you trying to kill me? You know, we're here to help you. You know, we're just trying to kind of communicate with you. And then she, because it was a she, said, besides, you can't kill us. Plants rule the world. And when I heard that, you know, it's one thing to say it now and go, yeah, okay. But no, in a journey, you feel it. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, they do rule the world. You know, we can't kill them. They will keep coming back. So then that just was a key that opened a door that led to a whole world of mugwort that I had never known existed. And mugwort continued to come to me through, you know, films or books or conversations, and still is to this day. So, you know, I consider her like my best friend.
Mugwort as your best friend. And yeah. And okay. So there's so much to unpack in what you just said. And I have to think that some people might go, that sounds so crazy. But then I have to remember that it was your great grandfather who in 1942 started a magazine that also seemed really super crazy at the time. He was talking about organic farming, which is your whole family. And I'm looking forward to, like, even in the 60s, people would stop by your farm because you were one of the, and Rodale has got the longest test site of organic gardening. So while this was all seemed as crazy, and now it's become more mainstream, do you think the same may come true with humans being able to see plant as sentient, as fellow sentient beings?
Most definitely, 100%. In fact, you know, when I was pitching the book to my publisher, I said, you know, this journeying and talking to, understanding that nature is sentient is similar to where, like, yoga was 40 years ago, or, you know, meditation was, you know, it's like only the weirdos do it. But, you know, we're starting to see, like, I just read that one country somewhere is making whales like actual people, you know, humans, not humans. They're making them actual persons. Mm-hmm. So, that have the rights of a person. And I think that's definitely the beginning. And that's actually how we have to think about nature in order to get through this environmental crisis that we're in.
Without a doubt. And I mean, we look at our language. So a noun is a person, place, or thing. So the whale is a thing in our language. It's an it. The dog's an it. I know this 1 5-year-old that was just learning this. Goes, well, if my dog's an it, I'm an it too. So you went from a fascist dictator with mugwort to mugwort bath. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, what it, you know, what it made me realize, you know, in trying to kill mugwort, what mugwort showed me is that we can all become fascist dictators if we're not careful. If we think, oh, I just need to eliminate this one thing and my life will be perfect or my life will be better. I need to eliminate this one group and clean up things and everything will be better. And that is never going to happen. It's not possible and it's not good. It's not healthy. It's not loving. The real challenge we all face is how do we learn to live and work together and respect and appreciate each other. And actually, one of the findings that has come out, you mentioned the Rodale Institute farming systems trial, which has been going on for over 40 years, where it's side by side organic agriculture next to chemical GMO farms. We study the soil and the runoff. And, you know, one of the key benefits of the organic system is that the diversity in the soil. And the more diversity there is, the more productive, the more healthy, the more abundant, the more resilient the crop is. And I think it's that way with people, too.
Without a doubt. So we're going to take a break and we're going to come back. We're talking right now with Maria Rodell. She's the author of Love, Nature, and Magic, Shamanic Journeys into the Heart of My Garden. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, and we'll be right back.
Seward Co-op is now offering convenient self-serve and prepackaged hot options and salad bars at both the Franklin and Friendship stores. Breakfast items available daily until 11 a.m. and brunch served all day every Sunday. Their weekly lunch and dinner menus highlight cuisines from around the world. They offer vegan, vegetarian, and gluten-free options daily. 95% of the ingredients used are organic from small-scale, local community food producers whenever possible. More at seward.coop.
Better if you don't refuse it. It's a treasure and you'll never lose it unless you lock up your door. For love, something if you give it away, give it away, give it away. Love, something if you give it away, you end up having more.
Let's have a really abundant world, and we do that by recognizing the sentience of other beings, including our plant relatives. Welcome back to Food Freedom Radio. I'm very pleased to have in studio with me, Maria Rodell. She's the author of Love, Nature, and Magic, Shamanic Journeys into the Heart of My Garden. So let's talk about that first word, love. Love is one of the first word in your title of your book.
Yeah, I've been obsessed with love since I was a little kid, you know, like learning about it, celebrating it, understanding it. And I even had written a book before Love, Nature, Magic on learning how to love, you know, and it was like a classic researched chapter by chapter book, and it didn't sell. I couldn't sell it to a publisher, and partly because you know I don't have a PhD in love, you know. So I was like, okay, you know, and I actually thought, well, that's fine. But when you know mugwort kind of got my attention, and I came up with the idea to write this book, Love, Nature, Magic. What I realized when I was done was that I had actually learned how to love by doing these journeys. because what I was able to do was see nature through other people's perspective, other beings' perspectives. And so things that annoyed me, like a mugwort initially annoyed me, once I could see the world through her perspective, I wasn't annoyed. I was grateful and I loved her. And the same happened with, you know, rabbits and even mosquitoes. I mean, a little harder to love, but I have compassion and I understand them now. And I think that's the thing that we are all craving and needing and wanting, and that really makes the universe exist, is love and the desire for love and the need for love. And we have to learn how to inspire love to create the future. And whether that's how we parent or how we work in our communities or even treat ourselves, that's the biggest challenge and most important challenge of all.
Right, to find that love in ourselves and that trust in ourselves. And that is hard. It's something that we're not taught in. And in fact, I go back, music from Melvina Reynolds, and that song, I'll play it some more at the end of this, was written in 1949. But Monday is Danny and we like to use it. But love is better if you don't refuse it. It's a treasure. You'll never lose it unless you lock up your door. And there's something about our culture that is kind of locked away our love.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is, you know, you see it everywhere around the world, you know, in wars, in, you know, family abuse, sexual abuse. There is a real, I think about my parents and how they were raised. They were raised at a time where it was like you weren't supposed to coddle your children, you know, children were to be seen and not heard, you know, and that created trauma in them. That, you know, they raised us with some of that trauma. And, you know, so now we have to heal our trauma. And I think love, legitimizing love as a real important power that we have, that's valuable and free, but so costly if you don't have it, is the important thing we have to do. I mean, imagine if Israel and Palestine just worked on loving each other rather than trying to kill each other.
And Thich Nhat Hanh said, offer your enemy happiness. Really think well of their happiness, because you want your enemies to be happier. And Paul Wellstone said, we all do better when we all do better. And that's true not only in a particular location, but also globally. We all do better when we all do better. And so we're kind of trapped in these paradigms that are really causing a lot of unnecessary suffering. So the second word in your book, Love, Nature, Magic, is nature. What does that mean?
Well, I think of nature is everything. You know, it's the computer we're talking on. It's the sound waves that are going through, you know, the miracle of sound waves that are traveling across the country. You know, it's what we see outside, but it's also who we are inside. And I think a lot of people have intellectually disconnected themselves from nature. They think, you know, I'm going to create a safe space and it's going to be all clean and, you know, no bugs will come out to get me. But in reality, we're all healthier when we're exposed to nature and we embrace ourselves as being part of nature and stop being afraid of, you know, the big bad wolf or bug or thing, and learn how to live in harmony and balance with each other.
And then the third word is magic, which is funny because I've been thinking about magic too for the last couple, but that word magic is magical. I mean, there's the magic of an acorn becoming an oak tree. I mean, magic is a very magical world, awe-inspiring. Yeah. But why did you use the word magic?
So, you know, I'm definitely not talking about, you know, tricks, magic tricks, but what I have found is that when you are aligned with nature and your purpose and your truth, magical things start happening. You know, whether it's, you know, somebody calling you that you were just thinking about, or you know, things showing up to that you didn't expect that are perfect. And so the universe is, I think, just magical. It's filled with magic. And the more we just accept that magic is, you know, part of the beauty and mystery and, you know, one interviewer said, well, it's kind of like God. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of like God, but it can be whatever you want it to be. You know, you don't have to believe in a certain thing for it to be true. You just have to like trust that there's this magic out there and that it's going to benefit you if you accept it.
So I'm going to read a quote from Giordano Bruno. All things are in the universe and the universe is in all things. We in it and it in us. This way, everything concurs in perfect unity. So Giordano Bruno, 1600, he was brutally murdered. But he also has a book on magic and his writing on magic and his viewpoint. And for those who don't remember, Giordano Bruno was a contemporary of Copernicus. And so he did not believe that the Earth was he believed that the sun did not rotate the Earth, but the Earth rotated the sun, and other radical ideas. But this idea of, I think if sometimes some people might hear magic and they'll think, oh, that sounds unscientific. But it could be part of a different way of comprehending the world. And it's a way of comprehending the world that is actually far more humble and more joyful than some of the dominant reductionist philosophies.
Well, and all the best scientists completely believe in magic. I mean,
beautiful. Beautiful. So we're going to take a break again. When we come back, we're going to do a deep dive in the history of Rodel and what it was like growing up. So we're talking to Maria Rodel, author of Love, Nature, and Magic, Shamanic Journeys into the Heart of My Garden. We'll be right back. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Come out to play, play in love, nature, and magic. We're talking with Maria Rodel, who's the author of the book Love, Nature, and Magic, Shamanic Journeys into the Heart of My Garden. So let's review some of the wonderful history that your family was witness to. So let's go back to it was your great-grandfather in 1942. And how did he end up starting an organic magazine way back in 1942?
So it was my grandfather, and he grew up in New York City on the Lower East Side, very, you know, Jewish tenement built, you know, very poor, and worked his way with his brother to create like an electrical engineering business, actually. And but his whole family had heart problems. Many of his siblings died young from heart issues. So he started, and they moved out to Pennsylvania to set up their electrical factory because it was cheaper than New York City. And he started reading about growing food and nutrition and soil. So Sir Albert Howard was one of his inspirations, Lady Eve Balfour. Those British people had studied how in India they do composting. So he bought a farm in Pennsylvania, started growing his own food and testing these theories. And in the 40s, remember, this was when the height of World War II chemicals were being, better living through chemistry was mm-hmm. like the savior of humanity, which really it was just toxic chemicals they were trying to get rid of. So he started a magazine called Organic Gardening and Farming in 1942. Once he realized, oh my gosh, I'm getting healthier by eating this food. And from the beginning, for him, it was a health issue. But gardeners who bought the magazine really just wanted bigger tomatoes. uh-huh. So there was a conflict between what the readers wanted and what my grandfather was interested in. And that's how the Prevention magazine came about. So he launched Prevention in 1950, which was a natural health magazine.
Prevention magazine, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so tell us about your growing up and what it was like to grow up on the farm, and then what happened in the 70s with the organic movement and what that was like.
Well, it was really idyllic while my grandfather was alive to grow up on the farm because, it was a working farm and it was just, pigs and sheep and cats and chickens and, it was beautiful and it was delicious. In the 60s, the late 60s, we started getting tons of visitors to the farm. The hippie movement kind of, adopted us, which is ironic because my grandparents and my parents were not hippies. In fact, they were more of the British gardening, everything was beautiful and traditional. So we started getting so many visitors that it became too much. And that's when my parents in the early 70s bought the farm that is now the Rodale Institute out in Maxitani, Pennsylvania, to sort of, plus it's also bigger. And that's where they started the farming systems trial. Because at the time, the mainstream media was like, oh, this will never work. This is stupid. They're quacks. There's no science behind this. But nobody was willing to do the science. So my father was convinced that we had to do the science. And so he hired a PhD and created the farming systems trial. And since then, it's not only proven that organic is more productive resilient over time, but we also were the ones who discovered that organically farmed soil stores more carbon than chemical soil, because chemicals are killing the life in soil, and it's the life in the soil that stores the carbon. So organic farming, especially regenerative organic farming, is a major way to solve the climate crisis and also clean the water, because you're not polluting the water that's running off.
So, and people can go to the Rodale Institute's website now, and you're also co-chair of that. So, and that has all that documentation of some of the stuff. So what else would you like to say about the Rodale Institute currently? Bring up today?
Well, our main mission right now, since we feel like kind of we've proven that organic is viable and important and safe and help and profitable for farmers, our main focus now is helping farmers to convert as and transition as much as possible. So we have a consulting service that any farmer can call, and we will help them transition to organic, because it's complicated and it's each region is different. So we actually have regional resource centers now. I think the closest one to where you are might be in Iowa, but we have also one in Washington State and in the South and in New Mexico. We have one in Italy. So, the focus is educating and transitioning as much as possible.
So there's the Rodale Institute, and then there's the Rodale Publishing, they were publishing Prevention Magazine. They also published Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, and you became the CEO of the Rodale Publishing Institute, the publishing arm. So you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a family business, and I became CEO in 2009. Unfortunately, it was at the time when the publishing industry was starting to decline because of the internet. But we published Men's Health in 99 countries. We published Women's Health, Runner's World Bicycling, Al Gore's book, but also the South Beach Diet, tons of books. And it was a great run. And then we sold it about 8 years ago to another publishing company. And we're all happy about that.
Yeah. And but you also published a lot of books yourself. So describe some of the other books you've authored.
Well, my first book was a gardening book, actually. It's called Organic Gardening, you know, Beautiful and Delicious. Because I was convinced I really wanted to show people that organic gardening could be beautiful. And it wasn't just all like, you know, pantyhose, you know, and reusing, you know.
It wasn't all hippie, messy stuff. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And I was actually asked by our book team to write it because my name, you know, they thought my name would sell well. And it actually did sell well. But what's great for me is it forced me to learn as much as possible about the history of organic gardening and how it works. Because just because you grow up in a family doesn't mean you understand everything. So that was my first book. Then I wrote a book with my daughter about pleasure and why women feel guilty about things that are actually good for us, you know, like chocolate and sex and all that stuff. And that was published by another publisher. I wrote Organic Manifesto, which was a history, and it came from my own questioning of, in 2009, there was a big debate about local versus organic. And I was like, this is like a false question. You know, why are people obsessed as either or? And like, how did we get here? So I went into a history of the organic movement and why people started using chemicals in the first place. And, you know, what was better, organic or local, which the answer is organic and local. And then I wrote a cookbook called Scratch to teach people how to cook, because back then it was hard to find organic foods in the supermarket, but not anymore, which is great. And then there was Love, Nature, Magic.
And also children's books.
Yes. So when I still owned the company, I realized I wanted to launch a children's book group imprint, because I realized that by the time we're grown up, we've already learned our habits and it's hard to change. But if you can get kids when they're small, to teach them things, it tends to stick better. So at that point, I wanted to write alphabet books that had really interesting facts about things. So it's teaching the kids and the parents at the same time. And the interesting thing about that is I didn't want to publish it under my own name because people would accuse me of nepotism and vanity publishing. And I did a shamanic journey, which is what Love, Nature, Magic is about. And this was 10 years ago. And I heard in that journey, you should publish under the name Mrs. Pinochle. And so I did. And now I have 10 Mrs. Pinochle alphabet books in print and 4 more on the way.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What a fun background. So shamanic, tell us about that. What does that mean? Because I must admit, I mean, for this, I actually think I had a really reductionist viewpoint. I mean, I actually put it as like it was really in touch with just a particular area in the globe. But shamanic is much broader.
Yeah, it's universal. Every country and culture has a version of shamanic journeying. And Michael Singer wrote a book about it. And he was an anthropologist and he coined the term core shamanism. So whether you're journeying in South America or in Russia or in Asia, the systems are the same and the places you go are similar. It's kind of this universal mind thing that happens. And there's no, I don't use any plant medicine or drugs to do it. All that is necessary is a rhythmic sound. So a drum, a rattle, some people use their voice. And I started doing it. I learned how to do it about 10 years ago, and I was doing it for trying to figure out the business or relationships. And it was just something I did kind of on my own. And I didn't talk about it to anybody because it's weird.
Like organic gardening was weird to your grandfather in 1942. Shamanic journeys was weird in 2024.
Yeah. But here's a great example of magic. So I did a couple of these journeys, you know, mugwort and multiflora rose. And I was like, okay, this might be a book. And I kept hearing this whisper in my ear, Chelsea Green, you know, Chelsea Green. Because I didn't own a publishing company anymore, so I couldn't just publish it myself. So I went on the Chelsea Green website, and I was like, I wonder if I know any of the editors here. And there was Fern Bradley, who I had known for like 30 years, who was one of my favorite editors, and very grounded gardening editor. And so I emailed her, and I was like, this is really weird, but can you take a look at this? She's like, yeah, we don't publish books like this, but I'll, you know, just because I know you, I'll read it. And after she read it, she's like, this is fun. Now let me take it to my group. And they were like, oh yeah, shamanic journey. It's the next big thing.
So you're listening to Food Freedom Radio. We're going to take a break. We're talking with Maria Rodell, author of Love, Nature, and Magic, Shamanic Journeys into the Heart of My Garden. We'll be right back, and we'll talk more about shamanic journeys and heart of garden and love, nature, and magic. What a fun conversation.
There's a land that I...
Seward Co-op is now offering convenient self-serve and prepackaged hot options and salad bars at both the Franklin and Friendship stores. Breakfast items available daily until 11 a.m. and brunch served all day every Sunday. Their weekly lunch and dinner menus highlight cuisines from around the world. They offer vegan, vegetarian, and gluten-free options daily. 95% of the ingredients used are organic from small-scale, local community food producers whenever possible. More at seward.coop.
Love is something, if you give it away, you end up having more. Money's dandy and we like to use it, but love is better if you don't refuse it. It's a treasure and you'll never lose it unless you lock up your door. For love. Something if you give it away.
Love is something if you give it away. Welcome back to Food Freedom Radio, and we're very pleased to be joined by Maria Rodell, author of Love, Nature, and Magic, Shamanic Journeys into the Heart of My Garden. She's also the author of Scratch, Organic Manifesto, the former CEO and chairman of Rodell Inc., and also active in the Rodell Institute. So our last segment, and so how would you like to all connect this? I mean, the long-term action in Rodell, shaman and love, magic, and nature. What is the theme that we're pointing to? What is the hope and what is the fear?
So, I mean, I've often asked myself that question, you know, because it seems like, you know, as I do things, it's like, oh, how is cooking, you know, connected to gardening? Well, of course, you know, you grow things and then you got to cook it. And, you know, in our culture, we tend to want to reduce things and focus very narrowly. You know, scientists focus on, you know, chemistry or biology or, you know, physics. But I think what I realized my interest is in connecting everything together and understanding how it all works together and what is our place in the universe. So what I think I found through writing, doing the journeys and writing Love, Nature, Magic is that really changing the world starts within us and within our own hearts and in our own behavior. And, you know, sometimes it seems like there's too much going on. We'll never be able to fix it. We'll never be able to stop climate change. We'll never be able to stop wars. But if each of us focus on healing our own selves and healing our relationship with the world around us, you know, our family, our, the, you know, nature that's around us, and being in kind of right relationship with things, that will spread. And that will heal humanity and heal the planet faster than any technological invention.
And what I heard from you right now is like, and also permission to see, to feel joy, even despite all the hardships going on right now.
Right. Yeah.
So we've got about 4 minutes left, and I want to go back to mugwort, because you were told when you were fighting with mugwort, and was told you had to use Roundup to get rid of it. I did check; mugwort is not considered a noxious weed in Minnesota, but what you found in this journey of mugwort and listening to mugwort is that it was actually offering a gift. Even what we see as weeds can be gifts.
Yeah, actually, that's, if there's one thing I want people to take away, is the idea, you know, of leaving the weeds. In fact, since I published the book, I had, you know, and then I had the stroke, I had a whole year to kind of experiment with my garden. And I'd heard Doug Tallamy speak about the bugs and birds that actually need certain weeds as host plants for their favorite food. So I was like, I'm just going to see what happens if I leave the weeds. And what happened is that my roses tripled in size. You know, trees that were like stunted and not like burst forth. And this, you know, beautiful like explosion of life happened. And I realized like, we've got to stop this idea of like the war on weeds, or that we have to have, you know, what I call in the book, the tyranny of ideness. Nature, and in fact, you mentioned noxious weeds. In my first book I wrote, which was like 26 years ago, I listed milkweed as a noxious weed, because it was back then. You could get fined $100,000 if you were a farmer for having milkweed.
So
no wonder we have a problem with monarch butterflies, because we attacked and destroyed their host plant. So, like, just changing our own perception about, you know, leaving the weeds is an incredibly powerful tool to heal not just the environment, but ourselves.
Without a doubt. And so I know I say I'm a nature led, and to actually just let nature take the lead is wonderful. And then you see the abundance. And we're going to go out again with this song, you know, love is something, if you give it away, you end up having more. And it's this idea of that we have to control the land, and you have to get your grass up here, and we're all like this. And that's just not that's almost comes out of a scarcity or a fear mentality. Yeah. And how do we open up to that deeper love and magic?
And love and joy. So let's focus on that.
Really? You think we should focus on love and joy, or should we just be really mad at each other and just keep being all, you know, fearful and yelling all the time?
I mean, if that's what you want to do, that's great, but I'm not interested.
And I'm not interested either. So last minute, Maria Riddell, give us a shout out for the different websites people can find you.
So I'm on Substack. My newsletter is called Life Unfiltered. My website is mariarodale.com. You can find my book on Amazon.com or, you know, wherever books are sold. And I'm also on Instagram as mariarodale.com. And I'd love to hear from people. And I'm keeping this conversation going on Substack, so that's the best place to find me.
Yeah, and we can now share this interview on social media as well, too. Well, I thank you so much, Maria Riddell, author of Love, Nature, and Magic, Scratch, an Organic Manifesto. And thank you for listening to Food Freedom Radio.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
It's a treasure, and you'll never lose it unless you lock up your door. For love, something, if you give it away, give it away, give it away. Love something, if you give it away, you end up having more.